Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. Thank you for joining us today for this special Thanksgiving week series where we're talking about leadership transition in the nonprofit sector. Before I introduce my guest, I want to share an update about our traveling road show. This year, we are extremely grateful for our partners in Toronto, Raleigh, Central Massachusetts, Philadelphia, New York City, and Detroit. Each of these locations afforded us ideal training spaces. They were fantastic hosts and the opportunity to share the vision of responsive fundraising. In 2020, mark my words, we will be hosting 12 stops on the Responsive Fundraising Roadshow, all in partnership with local organizations who share our vision for a more thoughtful, holistic, and sustainable approach to fundraising. If your organization would like to partner with us in 2020, we would love to hear from you. There is no cost to host the Responsive Fundraising Seminar. In fact, we will reimburse any expense your organization incurs, and we will provide your board with a complimentary board training while we are in town. Being a host of the Responsive Fundraising Seminar is a great opportunity to demonstrate to your nonprofit community that your organization is thinking big picture, long term, and wants to ensure that your organization is a place where fundraising can thrive. If you'd like more information, please don't hesitate to reach out to me at any time. Hi, Mary Ann. Thank you for being on the Fundraising Talent Podcast with me this morning. It is certainly a pleasure to have you back. I think it was about a year ago that we had you on here. Since then, you and I have met during my seminar in Toronto. We've become friends. We follow each other on social media, and I'm delighted that you're going to be a part of this special Thanksgiving series. Before we start the conversation, would you mind just introducing yourself to our listeners?
Sure, I'm happy to. Jason, I'm thrilled to be here. And I've been in the sector, social profit sector, for 33 years, primarily as a fundraiser and leader of organizations. And since 2006, I've had my own philanthropic and organizational health boutique firm called the Medalist Group. And I call myself the Chief Happiness Officer.
Yes, yes. I love what you're doing. And I'm sure many of the people in my audience are probably overlapping with yours. So I'm delighted that we're talking today. This week, we're having a conversation about leadership transition and how the nonprofit sector can better navigate the changes between each of these generations. And I had another guest on the podcast here recently who actually talked about the fact that the current reality is that we have like five generations in the workplace right now. And I was trying to figure out, and I guess there's names for them and everything, and forgive me, I don't know what they are. But at a big macro level, what's your sort of take on that, this generational sort of movement? What's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love that you don't know the names. I do my best not to know them. You know, honestly, because I think as soon as we start to narrow human beings into buckets like that, right, and yeah. those are demographic buckets, we do them and ourselves and our organizations a disservice. So I think that's where I start to say, yeah, I think we have such a rich experience in the workplace right now because we have such diversity in terms of all kinds of things, but specifically we're talking about age here. So I think it is true, and I think it presents some challenges, but it also presents great opportunities for the sector.
So the first question I'm asking, and I've had people who sort of represent this retiring generation, and I've had some younger people on this series this week who are sort of doing what I'm referring to as honoring. But what's your thoughts on how we as a sector, most honor this retiring generation of nonprofit leaders?
Huh. Well, I love that. I think I have not given that much thought, to be honest, because, you know, the few people, excuse me, that I know who have really thoroughly retired, because what I find generally is that folks folks leave, but they kind of stay connected in some way, either through the occasional contract work or deeply involved in volunteerism and so on. I think one of the ways that you recognize, those long careers is by not putting them out to pasture, in fact. So,
yeah.
Stay connected. They are potentially great sponsors and mentors. Lots of folks in our sector who are of a certain age are also really very innovative and open to learning. And I think this kind of idea that, you retire and go play golf, it's not really true. I think most retired donors that I know are really fully engaged in the work world, just perhaps in a different way. So that's how we honor them, by not putting them out to pasture.
Yeah. So just hanging on that question a little bit. So does that mean, are you of the opinion, Marianne, that essentially the word retirement sort of doesn't serve a lot of us very well anymore?
I do. I've never thought of it that way, but it's not a word. It's not a great word. Yeah. I think the reality is that, we're living in a world where I read in a National Geographic that a baby girl born today will live to be 130 years old. I mean, imagine that, right? So healthcare being what it is, and research and so on, we're living longer. Our kids are staying home longer. Some of us need to keep working longer. So, how do you wrap all of that up with still making room for the younger generation to move into the work world? That's the complexity of it.
Yeah. So I've met one of your daughters, and if we were talking about your daughter and Kim said to us, I want to get into the nonprofit sector and I want to be really good at this. And knowing that you've experienced the adventure that you have, Marianne, what's your advice to her to avoid maybe some of the bumps and bruises that those of us who've been around a little bit longer have experienced?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I do tell her and would continue to say is get your education while you're young, because I think that really matters. Because even though we're a sector that, we're all about breaking down barriers and making access to things like post-secondary education better. We talk about poverty eradication and so on. We are still a sector of highly privileged people working with other highly privileged people. So that said, to get into the sector, if she wanted to do it, she needs to have a good, solid educational background. But I think, if I'm really honest, I wouldn't recommend the sector for
really?
Her.
Really? Okay.
I wouldn't because I think she can do, and many young people can do some great things in the world.
Yeah.
And be involved in the sector, right? So have a career and a passion and be involved in the sector in another way. Because at this exact moment in time, I think the sector needs to do some work before we are deserving of the brilliant young people that are coming up today.
That's bold.
Bold. It's true. I think the only thing I can equate it with is, I often hear actors say they wouldn't encourage their kids to go into acting.
Sure.
Right.
Okay.
I feel a little bit that way. I feel a little bruised my experience. Right. And I look at her and I think so much, both of my girls, so much potential. And they will change the world. There's no doubt in my mind, either in small ways or big ways. But I'm not sure this is the way I would suggest they do it.
Okay. So, but if they insist and if they dig in their heels and they say, I'm an independent woman and I can do what I want, mom.
Yeah,
what sort of advice are you going to give them? Like, what are those, to avoid those bumps and bruises? Are you going to give them shoulder pads or, what are you going to do?
It's a good question because, that's the thing about raising strong, independent women. They have a voice of their own and they will do whatever it is they choose to do. So education for sure is one. I would say find mentors and mentors and sponsors. So find others who have succeeded in the sector that is important to them. I would say continuously learn. So I never have less than a large pile of books beside my bed, because I think continuous learning is so incredibly important because things change so rapidly now. And while I may not become a master and they may not become masters of some of these things, they will at least be aware of them and recognize, you know, the one that comes to mind for me is digital currency. I couldn't explain it to someone right now, you know, how to accept cryptocurrency as a fundraising organization, but I know who to go to. I know enough about it to know that I need to know, right? And so that's probably the biggest piece of advice I give any young person is never stop learning. School doesn't end when you get your diploma.
But isn't that okay? So let's your daughter decides, one of your daughters decides that she's going to do this. She's going to go work for this small charity. Isn't the fascination with things like cryptocurrency actually what causes some of the bumps and bruises that we get fascinated with the wrong things?
Yes. And so I think it can be, so of course there are it's like any recipe, right? There's the basics that you have to know and you have to put into the sauce.
Yeah.
But then I think you need to know what would happen if I added cayenne pepper to this sauce, and cryptocurrency is that cayenne pepper. What would it look like? What does it look like for other organizations? I don't think you can avoid those things. I think you need to be aware of them and know whether they're the right things for you or not. I mean, paying attention to the basics is probably something that got lost. I think that you've been amazing with your work at bringing people back to the basics. And I've heard other consultants talk about the fact that, you know, we need to just pay attention to our donors. We need to stop segmenting them in a way that doesn't make sense. You know, I think that those basics are important, but I don't think you can ignore innovation.
Right. I don't think so either, but I think, and I think some of the conversations even you and I have had and that I've had with other individuals who've had similar journeys like yours, you would say that the technical knowledge that our sector tends to get sort of fascinated and sort of immersed in, is what prevents us from being able to sort of learn what we have to learn. What has caused you the challenges over your career path? Was it ever the lack of technical knowledge with cryptocurrencies?
No, but it was. But you're right. It was the lack of technical information around things like leadership.
Right.
Different discipline, but absolutely true.
Okay.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. So let's get off the idea of your daughter. But if you're talking to a young person, so if you're at Congress this year, if you're at Congress and you meet this young man who's decided that he wants to be in the sector, what's your advice to him? He's working for a longer tenured leader who's been running this particular organization for a long time. What's your advice for him? What are you saying to him about sort of surviving the sector for the next, say, 10 years?
Yeah. Well, I think within the organization that he's working, he needs to be a really good listener.
Uh-huh.
I read a book many years ago by Kevin Cashman called Leadership from the Inside Out. And in it, he says that listening is an act of love. And, you know, we talk about building cultures of philanthropy, and philanthropy is about love, but we don't pay enough attention to each other in the workplace. We're not really listening to one another. So I think that's the first thing. And not just coworkers, not just donors, but to the leaders, right? We need to be talking to each other and listening to each other. And I think developing relationships across the organization in a way that kind of builds your own, maybe I'd call it your own little board of directors, right?
Uh-huh.
So that
yeah.
you have people within your organization, but also externally to you, who are part of your career journey and developing your career. I think that's the biggest advice I'd give.
If you're sitting there at Congress and the two of you are talking and this young man says to you, my boss doesn't get me. Does his boss really not get him, or is there something that he's missing? If he's saying, you know, I'm working for this 52-year-old gentleman and he doesn't understand me, I'm only 26. Does he really not understand him, or what does this young man need to understand about his boss?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible his boss doesn't understand him.
Sure.
I think, again, it's hard to speak in generalizations, but I think that it really just comes back to, if you think someone doesn't get you, how well do you get them? And in that situation, you know, he works for someone else. So you can never forget that dynamic that someone is the boss. And if it's not you, what are you doing to understand what matters to them? So, you know, maybe it's that this boss really cares that your bum is in a seat at 9 o'clock in the morning, right? Maybe that matters to your boss, and maybe it really doesn't matter to you. You know, for you, it's about getting the job done, and that's okay too, but you need to have that conversation. It can't be, because those are the things that add up. That's one example, but the tendency is for those things just to kind of pile up. We don't talk about them, and then we feel misunderstood, right?
Yeah.
Misunderstanding is really generally a lack of communication. We just need to be talking to each other. And at the end of the day, you know, if he's in a role where the boss says, you must be there at 9 a.m. and that's just outside of your paradigm. And you know that you work weekends and evenings and you're doing a great job in getting the work done. But for some reason, this leader is stuck on you being there at 9 a.m. Maybe it's just not going to be a good match. Right?
Right. Yep. Yep. So what's your advice to that boss? So let's say, for instance, again, you're sitting there in that conference room and you figure out that the boss is actually sitting on the other side of this gentleman, this young man.
Yeah.
What's your advice to the boss?
To the longer tenured
boss who's sitting there and you figure out, okay, you've now got this dynamic playing out where you've literally got the young person and you've got the more tenured person. What are you saying to him?
Well, first of all, being tenured doesn't make you good at your job. Not that I would necessarily say that, right? But you can have also developed some pretty poor habits. And if you, like the young person I advise, are not continuously learning and understanding that, you know, your millennial or Gen Z or whatever it is employee, you know, doesn't want to roll into work until 10 a.m. and that's a problem for you. Perhaps a little bit of learning and understanding. If that person is achieving their goals and objectives, if that person is doing a great job, you know, why are you as a leader stuck on something as unimportant as what time they arrive at work, right? I think we, you know, there are certain roles, obviously, if I'm the person at the front desk, and I need to be there at 9 a.m. But if I'm not, if I'm a fundraiser who does work off hours and weekends, you know, flexibility is really important. So I think leaders often find themselves in these roles, especially if they've been at it for a while, and think, I've arrived. But you never arrive. The minute you think you've arrived, you've definitely not. You need to continuously figure out what you need to know. Right, life is a continuous learning journey. That's the most important advice I could give any leader.
Yeah, and I think that sort of circles back with the notion of retirement. Is there a point at which when you start thinking retirement? I think about a leadership transition that has sort of very poorly happened, played out in my local community, and I think the word retirement has just been sort of overused. But I also think it may have been sort of the rationale for this gentleman who is retiring to sort of lose his, he lost connection with the organization, lost connection with just so many different things. And so as he was passing the baton, it became very difficult for him to contribute, I guess you could say. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So not knowing that specific, I think that we're often not, so the same is true. It all centers around respect, right? We have, you know, I'll say this and people here in Toronto will probably go, I know who she's talking about, but there is a particular leader in our sector, who has, I think she's into her 70s, and probably once a year I run into an at an event, and invariably someone will say, I can't believe this person hasn't retired yet.
Okay.
And I'm struck by that. And I remember asking her about it, and she said, I still have a lot of work to do. I said, and does it, you know, is it bothersome that people make these kinds of comments? And she just kind of shrugged. Right. Because, you know, again, it just comes down to a lack of respect. What does age have to do with it exactly? Right. It, depending upon where you are in your life cycle. I mean, I had my kids really late, so it changes the, you know, it changes the kind of trajectory of your career in lots of ways. So I just think it's a lack of respect is where it comes down to, and perhaps a little lacking of self-awareness, right? And the ability to manage ourselves around this, because as the new leader coming into that situation, what a lost opportunity to have not, you know, really mined this individual brain, right? Really come to understand who they were and learn about the relationships they'd managed in the community. I mean, what a wealth of information that is lost when that happens. It doesn't do the sector any good at all.
Well, yeah. And I can't imagine that the same things were not said about this gentleman here in my local community for say the last decade. And there were times when I wanted to say, and I wasn't particularly engaged with this organization, but I was sort of on the periphery, and I knew what, you know, in a small community, you know what's happening with organizations.
Right.
I think I wanted to say something along the lines of, you know, major donors don't retire, you know. In fact, a lot of your major donor relationships actually get really, really major when someone is 75 or 80 years old. And so I would think about, like, with this individual you're describing there in the Toronto area, if this person has intimate relationships with significant donors, those major donors aren't retiring. They start giving in the most significant ways. And if these organizations don't navigate, we're talking about people who are oftentimes at the forefront of the fundraising process.
No question.
Yeah.
No question.
And there's an arrogance that I tend to see. I don't tend to think it's the 26 to 28 year old sort of anxious young fundraising, young person, but it tends to be maybe the 35 to 42 year old who's like, I've got to be the CEO tomorrow. And I'm like, but you know what? You haven't built relationships with these people. And these people are bankrolling your operation, and you haven't taken any of them out to lunch.
Absolutely. And I think that's a reality for an emerging leader, right? I mean, if you're in your early 40s and likely, and in our world successful, you're moving into a CEO. That's kind of your sweet spot. You're moving into an executive director or CEO role.
Yeah.
And there is a pressure to know everything, right? Yeah. So there is this pressure that, okay, now I'm CEO, I must know everything. Whereas, you know, if you read anything about leadership and humble leadership and the importance of humility to being a great leader, you know, the opposite is true, right? It's really about gathering great people around you. And if it all comes down to an excellent employee experience, I mean, I really want a range of folks. I would have loved to have kept that retiring person around. Right, for as long as I possibly could. Again, with a conversation that says, listen, I need you not to step in where you don't belong, right? You need to be grown-ups and have that kind of conversation. I want your advice when I ask for it. All of those things so that nobody feels threatened and nobody feels put out to pasture.
Marianne, before I let you go, going back to that, the notion that we have these four or five generations in the workplace, and this idea that I was sort of picking on about sort of the fascination with cryptocurrency, is this really going to be all that big of a deal in say 10 years?
Cryptocurrency?
No. The generations. all this. You know, once the boomers, for example, once the baby boomers are just really call them retired, whatever. The boomers are not the dominant sort of senior people in the workplace, is all this generational talk going to sort of phase out? And is it just a trend, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I mean, I'm not an expert in demographics, so I guess I don't know really the answer to that. But I think it is certainly, it's one of those things we've talked a lot about, I'd say, for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about a leadership gap because we missed a whole generation of folks getting into the sector. Those, and a lot of people are going to be mad at me for saying that I wouldn't advise my daughter to get into it.
But
I'm used to this. I think it will be. I think that when we talk about inclusivity, and that's another one of those words, you know, for me, inclusivity is a value I've held my entire career, my entire life.
Yeah.
And now it's a thing that you can get a job in, which is awesome. So I think that it may swing a little bit in terms of what does inclusivity mean? What does the employee experience look like in different ways? But I think it'll still be here. It'll just be slightly modified.
Yeah. Well, I've had you for more than 20 minutes, and we start to lose our listeners after 25 minutes or so. Marianne, if somebody's listening and they want to banter this around with you, and they say they're definitely going to push all their youngsters into the nonprofit sector. They want to tell you their thoughts on that. What's the best way for them to reach out to you and start that conversation?
Absolute best way is on LinkedIn. Marianne Kerr on LinkedIn, Chief Happiness Officer at the Medalist Group.
It has been a pleasure, always is, and you're always welcome to come back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.